The story you are about to hear is true. Only the names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Brings you Dragnet.
Just tell me the facts, ma'am. Just the facts.
Facts, just the facts. He had done this hundreds of times while working on hundreds of cases. The grizzled, veteran police detective sergeant checked his notepad for details, and then he turned to the eyewitness to confirm the facts. His job was to confirm the facts, just the facts, as the fictional radio detective Sergeant Joe Friday did every week on the show, Dragnet. Officer, tell me what you saw on Thursday morning at 11:04 a.m. in the parking lot behind the First National Commercial Bank. Be as accurate and truthful as possible. Share as many details as you remember.
Person 1. I saw a tall guy with a blue knit beanie hat come from the far side of the parking lot. Then he approached the elderly woman, pointed a gun at her, and demanded the money that she had just taken out of the ATM. She seemed really scared, almost like she was going to faint. The guy grabbed her purse and then started running down the alley over there.
Officer, tell me what you saw on Thursday morning at 11:04 a.m. in the parking lot behind the First National Commercial Bank. Be as accurate and truthful as possible. Share as many details as you remember.
Person 2. There was this tall guy with a white cowboy hat sitting in a pickup truck in the parking lot. He revved up his engine a couple of times, so I noticed him. Then this other guy, a lot shorter, got out and headed toward the ATM. This woman was doing some business at the machine. This shorter guy came up behind her and she turned around, looked scared. She started running. Then the tall guy jumped out of the pickup truck and grabbed her purse. Then both guys got back in it and sped away, burning rubber as they did. They drove out of the parking lot and made a right onto Flower Street. Happened so fast, I didn't get their license plate.
Officer, tell me what you saw on Thursday morning at 11:04 a.m. in the parking lot behind the First National Commercial Bank. Be as accurate and truthful as possible. Share as many details as you remember.
Person 3. This old lady got robbed. She took her money out of the ATM, and then this guy robbed her. I didn't get much of a look at him. I think he was wearing shorts and a Hawaiian shirt, but that might have been someone else. Happened real quick. Real quick.
Officer, tell me what you saw on Thursday morning at 11:04 a.m. in the parking lot behind the First National Commercial Bank. Be as accurate and truthful as possible. Share as many details as you remember.
Person 4. I had just been to the grocery store and was carrying my bags home. They were having a special on canned soup, so I bought some just to stock up. Anyway, I heard a woman screaming that she had been robbed, saw a guy running. Thought he was the robber, but he turned out to be, instead, a guy trying to help out, trying to catch the robber. I got a good look at him. Big guy in a gray sweatshirt that said, "Best Grandpa." But like I said, he was just trying to help out. He was not the real robber.
Officer, tell me what you saw on Thursday morning at 11:04 a.m. in the parking lot behind the First National Commercial Bank. Be as accurate and truthful as possible. Share as many details as you remember.
Person 5. I live in a cardboard box down this alley. I've been living there ever since the space alien stole my home and turned it into a command center. I know they plan to conquer the Earth and turn us all into their slaves. Yeah, there was a guy running down the alley. But I knew he was not real. Just a trick they play on us, to deceive us.
The police detective sergeant did not know it, since he had never had the desire to study philosophy. But he was, nonetheless, an adherent of Ludwig Wittgenstein's logical empiricism. There are facts. Discoverable, evidence-based facts. Hard facts, as the detective sergeant would say. Facts, not fictions. Facts are as real as bullets, burglaries, bullies, and bastards. Facts are discovered, uncovered, revealed. They are not made up. Not mere possibilities, not speculation. Put all the facts together and you have a whole picture. You know what happened. You know what really occurred. You have the facts. In 1922, one of the 20th century's most influential philosophers published a small book that began, "The world is the totality of facts, not things." He wrote in German and used the expression Tatsachen, which is most often translated into English as facts. Probably a better rendering would be events. The world, he claims, is the totality of events. Events, not things. Activities, not objects. He continues, "For the totality of the events, Tatsachen determines both what is the case and also what is not the case." That is, a statement is true insofar as it matches the events that actually occurred. It is false if the events did not occur. Our police detective is attempting to determine which purported events occurred and which did not occur. Among philosophers of the early 20th century, Ludwig Joseph Johann Wittgenstein was a unique bird. A mathematical mystic with almost no need for human connections, he wrote most of his seminal work, pompously titled Tractatus Logico-Philosophicus, while in a prisoner of war camp. He finished it in an isolated fishing camp on the Norwegian coast. He had initially been trained as an aeronautical engineer, but his energies moved from equations about aerodynamics to a study of the nature of mathematics itself. Unannounced and seemingly homeless, he arrived at Cambridge University, literally sitting on Bertrand Russell's doorstep. Some historians have called Wittgenstein Russell's most significant student. But their relationship was never that of mentor and student. Combative peers would probably be a more accurate description. Both had similar interests in logic, mathematics, and the philosophical foundation of empirical science. Both were incredibly brilliant, and each was seminal in their own way. However, Russell's biographers cite over 50 major works that he published during his long lifetime. Wittgenstein published just one. Bertrand Russell was a sensation seeker whose life was well publicized in the tabloids. He was fired for his public atheism, jailed for his anti-war and anti-colonial polemics, and flamboyant in his many liaisons with married women. He ran for parliament, organized protests, and stood firmly against his own country's policies and actions. He was loved and detested, arrested and fired, banned and celebrated. A very public figure with a distinct persona. Wittgenstein could not be more different. His favorite pastime was said to be going to a movie and sitting in the very front row of the theater in order to be enveloped by the visual image. He ate his meals alone, and he never listened to the radio. Instead, he loudly played phonograph records, usually music by one of the Romantic era composers, particularly Schumann and Brahms. Wittgenstein volunteered to serve in the Austrian military during the First World War, and he was awarded for his bravery. His unit was captured by the Italians, and he spent 18 months in a prisoner of war camp. He never discussed these experiences with his students. Some have attributed an ethic of endurance and forbearance to him, There is no record of any public comment about world events. Even though his family had Jewish ancestry, his grandfather converted to Catholicism, he never spoke against Hitler. Wittgenstein attached himself to Bertrand Russell just as Russell's monumental work on Principia Mathematica was nearing its completion. Alfred North Whitehead and Russell had together created what is now termed symbolic logic, and then attempted to recast all the theorems of mathematics as a subclass of logic. Many years later, Bertrand Russell commented that creating the Principia Mathematica was a lifetime's work, accomplished in just 3 years. Mr. Whitehead continued to do mathematics, but my brain was burnt. Rigorous mathematical thinking is a young man's work. However, I was no longer young. After the publication of his small book, Tractatus Logico-Philosophicus, Ludwig Wittgenstein ceased to do philosophy because, he claimed, that in a mere 525 axioms, he had solved all the persistent philosophical issues that had plagued his many predecessors over the generations. Having solved all of the persistent philosophical problems, Wittgenstein then spent the next decade bouncing around doing a variety of menial jobs. Then, he reappeared in Cambridge, where he was given a faculty position at King's College. There, he spent the rest of his life writing about how utterly wrong he had been in his earlier work. Writing, but never publishing. He called what he was doing mere musings. Random thoughts on a variety of subjects, very different from his very tightly structured axiomatic approach of the Tractatus. These later musings were never published during his lifetime. However, his philosophical investigations were collected and published by his students. These musings formed the basis for a philosophical approach often called ordinary language philosophy. Historians have often claimed that Wittgenstein, in his two distinct phases, created the two dominant but intensely competitive strands of 20th century philosophy, his later ordinary language philosophy versus his earlier logical empiricism. This historical digression would have no interest for the detective sergeant, aka Sergeant Joe Friday. He was investigating a crime to find the facts and then write a report about what he had found. His concerns were consistencies and, obviously, inconsistencies. He needed to know which witnesses to believe and which to discredit. There were, he believed, only one set of facts, not many. Only one version could be true. Only one matched the facts. He believed that the true version of the facts would not only be self-consistent, but also demonstrable by the other facts. That is, the facts would cohere with each other. This fact would follow that one and precede this other one. He would know what happened first, then second, then third. And by demonstrating its coherence, it would show its truth. Things fit together in a sensible, clearly visible way. The police detective sergeant would not use such fancy words. He would probably say something like, getting the story straight. Straight as in a straight line, linear, without curves or twists, no false rabbit trails, spirals and circles are not allowed, linear, straight to the point, clear direction. One end points directly to the other. Wittgenstein wrote that we make pictures of the facts. The police sergeant agrees. He wants a clear picture, a non-distorted image. Fuzzy images are not clear pictures. We don't know what is happening. Things are not distinct. Ambiguity is bad. Poor lighting creates doubt, uncertainty, that too is bad. Crisp, clear, clean images, images that fully reproduce the facts.
The story you are about to hear is true.
Just tell me the facts, ma'am, just the facts. Thank you.
The sergeant must also create a report. Even Joe Friday complained about doing reports. The report is then submitted to the district attorney, who must decide whether there is sufficient evidence to bring charges against a perpetrator. The report depends on the facts that the police detective sergeant has gathered. The district attorney seeks evidence, evidence that can be submitted to a court, evidence that establishes guilt. Evidence is a claim about the facts. It can, and will almost certainly be, challenged by an opposing attorney in a court. If you will, evidence is a story, or a narrative, about the facts. Under what terms or conditions were the facts obtained? How reliable are the sources about the facts? Were salient or important facts dismissed or omitted in creating the police sergeant's report? Most importantly, evidence is subject to the determination of a judge. The judge decides whether specific evidence is admissible within a trial. Legal precedents and quality of the evidence submitted are often determining factors for a judge's determination. A sloppy police investigation or report may impact whether some particular evidence is admitted for consideration during a trial. So, the detective sergeant not only seeks the facts, but he must also carefully prepare his report so as to ensure that it meets established judicial standards. How the facts are presented may be as important as what the facts are. Wittgenstein's Tractatus is often described as a seminal work in the logical empiricist, analytical approach to philosophy. Wittgenstein originally sought Russell out because he had been thinking about the nature of mathematics, more specifically about the relationship between mathematics and logic. He knew the work that Russell and Whitehead were doing, and he agreed with them that all of mathematics can be subsumed under logic. He also agreed with them that both mathematics and logic were tautological. That is, neither logic nor mathematics is about the real empirical world that we experience all the time. Rather, they are deductive systems where theorems are derived from axioms by the application of specific sets of formalized rules. In popular language, both mathematics and logic are proof approaches where statements are proved by applying a group of rules. For both Bertrand Russell and Ludwig Wittgenstein, neither logic nor mathematics has empirical, real-world content. Both were purely formal systems. The Tractatus states that since logic and mathematics are tautologies, their derivations can be shown by mathematical logical proof, but never applied to actual world events. This is mathematics or logic in a vacuum with no content or applicability, an interesting endeavor with no practical value. For Wittgenstein, this conclusion haunted him. Science, especially physics, uses mathematics all the time to explain and predict events. Suppose two people are having a conversation and one notes, "This morning the sky is very gray." Now, according to Wittgenstein, it is not the sky that makes the observation true or false. No, rather, it is whether the facts, Tatsachen, render it true, whether the facts match up to the observation. Think of it this way. Someday in the distant future, there is a computer that has as its database the totality of facts. It stores and can analyze every event, ever. Now, the data are not themselves true or false. No, they are just data. It requires someone to make a statement, like this morning's sky, and then for the computer to compare the statement to the totality of facts in its database. Using the rules programmed into it, it renders a decision, true statement or false statement. Unfortunately, the situation is not so simple. Most damaging to Wittgenstein's argument is the ambiguity about what a fact is. Tatsachen. The facts. Wittgenstein uses phrases like states of affairs, how things are, what is going on, the way it is, the events. Facts are said to describe these situations, but what those phrases means is left unsaid. We do not know what a fact is. We don't know its shape or color or size or where we can find them. Facts are an unknown. Two neighbors each leave their houses and greet each other. One comments, "The sky seems really gray this morning." The other looks off to a distance and sees the sun breaking through the clouds. The second neighbor comments, "Looks like it is breaking up. Not so cloudy." Two statements both purporting to be true. They are not contradictory, and both could, in fact, be true. It depends on which direction one is looking. For Wittgenstein, this is a problem. The facts have to be expanded to include factors like where one is standing, the time of the day, the velocity of the wind, etc., etc. Facts are not simple, unambiguous entities. The full statement of a fact may involve many, many factors. Indeed, one can imagine a single fact easily being the size of multiple volumes of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Facts are not simple entities that can be readily discovered or encountered. Equally important, we never know the rules by which matching up with the facts would work. The computer of the future, which analyzes the totality of the facts, must be given rules to judge how well a particular statement matches up to the facts. The computer needs specific rules to sort statements into categories. The rules tell it, this is what a true statement looks like, and that is what a false statement looks like. Finally, Wittgenstein facts are atomic. They are unrelated to and not influenced by other facts. They stand alone, fully independent. Russell even called his theory logical atomism, meaning that they were like atoms in chemistry, not reducible to other things. Wittgenstein took this position because he believed that the only relationship between facts is one of pure logic. Facts are true because they match up with the actual events, not because they have a relationship to other facts. This position is in direct contrast to the position of yet another fictional detective, Sherlock Holmes. Sherlock Holmes deduced that the true killer was left-handed by direct implication from other facts that he had observed. Facts are not isolated and independent of each other. No. They connect and intertwine, merge and melt, reveal and hide. Knowing one fact leads directly to knowing others. Smoke your pipe, play your violin, think it through. Then, you will see how the facts are connected. To return to the fictional radio detective, aka Sergeant Joe Friday. Because of his extensive prior experience in criminal investigations, he makes a guess, hypothesis, theory, speculation about the crime. His guess is true if it matches the actual events that occurred. But suppose two equally credible witnesses report seeing contradictory events. Now, if there was a computer with a database of the totality of all events, we could, probably, decide which version was true. But such a database is neither available nor possible. Then, what are we left with? All we are left with is the detective's experience, which he uses to meet the court's requirements for demonstrable evidence. And this leads to the probability of truth.
The story you are about to hear is true. Only the names have been changed to protect the innocent.